Hello, this is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted today to be here with UT Dallas chemistry professor Jeremiah Gashenschmidt and student Ritvik Kaikini. Did I pronounce your name right, Jeremiah?
It was close. It was fine. I like that. It was a better pronunciation than I think than I use normally.
Okay, so why don't you introduce yourself and the kind of research you're doing?
So I'm Jeremiah Gashenschmidt. I'm just down the campus up there, and we do research that's sort of at the interface of chemistry and bioengineering. And primarily what we're looking at is how we can get capsid structures of viruses. So if you can imagine a virus, usually people think of a big head, and it's got a tail and creepy legs. And the head is filled with genetic information, and that's the part we're really actually interested in. And so we're taking that, and we're trying to stop it from being bad and try to get it to be good. And so we're trying to make it do different things, focusing perhaps on releasing drugs or targeting new cell types, where a lot of this work is done right now. It's done sort of at a transcriptional level, so mm-hmm. trying to basically create new DNA that will then create a new virus. What we're trying to do is actually simplify it a little bit by, I would say simplify it by coming up with new chemical ways to modify it. So doing actual organic chemistry on the virus, or doing sort of materials chemistry on the virus that imparts new properties so that they say they respond to laser irradiation, or they respond to heat or light in some way. That causes an effect we want to see.
So I guess one of the applications you just referred to is drug delivery. Is that right? So the problem is how you track where the drug is being active, or
so. There's this entire field of medicine that's sort of emerging called theranostic development. So therapies and diagnostics all sort of rolled into one, and the idea behind that is, if you have a drug and it's going someplace, how do you know it's actually doing anything, and how do you know it's doing what you want to do where you think it's actually working? And so the idea is to, in some ways, combine the therapeutic aspect of a molecule with a reporter or something that you can see on an MRI or something like that. Or light with like fluorescence.
Right. So one of the tracing strategies you have is to use fluorescence, or in some cases bioluminescence. So you modify the virus in a way where it either emits light in one of the two mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So just explain a little bit how, when you're doing this in the lab, how you use the fluorescence.
Well, so the viruses, they're very, very tiny. So the ones we work with are 30 nanometers. So you can't see them with even very powerful optical microscopes. They're not going to be visible. But if they emit light, if they emit a light and there are enough of them close enough together and they're all emitting light all at once, you can get an idea of where they are in the cell. So fluorescence is a way, if you can put a small fluorescent molecule and then fluorescent molecule is just something that it takes light, like ultraviolet light or room light, absorbs it, then re-emits it. It's like if you have a black light in some of your shoes, you put under the black light and it glows. That's fluorescence. And so that's a very useful property if you're trying to track things that you otherwise can't see. Because now it is emitting its own light, and you're not relying on reflection or anything like that to actually track where it's going.
Okay, so then that brings us to why you contacted us at the Yacht Sci Lab, which was, as you're doing the experimental work, you're collecting lots of data, there's a lot going on, and it occurred to you that it might be, why not, useful to see if one could use sonification, converting the light into sound, as one kind of way of keeping track of things. So you want to just explain your original motivation?
Well, in most sciences, we traffic in a lot of data, particularly in life sciences. There's a lot of data being collected and it's very multivariable. So you have a lot of different things that you're trying to simultaneously watch. And keeping track of all of that all at once visually is, it can be kind of untenable. And so is our ability, I think, to track things with our eyes simultaneously is very hard. I mean, you would imagine trying to watch a game of basketball where there are three or four basketballs on the court. That's not the case with sound, it seems. You know, we have the ability to distinguish multiple different sounds all at the same time. And that's sort of the whole idea behind music theory, right? Is you know, different sounds create a different sensation.
Plus, we have the ability to selectively pay attention to a sound or just ignore it.
Sure.
Whereas if it's in front of your eyes, then it's very difficult to ignore what you're looking at. Maybe this is the good segue where we've been working on a project now for a couple of months with several students. One of them is Ritvik, who's here. Another one is
Ashton
Briante.
Victoria and Anna.
And Victoria and Anna, what's Victoria's last name? Do you remember?
Nine.
Okay, yeah. And she works in your lab, I think?
Yes, Victoria is my student. And Anna will be my student soon, too. Yeah.
Yes. And so we've been working for a couple of months, and you kind of gave us the challenge of, can you convert the light emitted by the bacteria into sound, and then can we play with it to see whether we can figure out whether a healthy development of a bacteria sounds different from one that's about to just die in your petri dish.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ritvik, why don't you just explain very quickly how you and Victoria have been working together?
Yeah, so this is my first term in my master's program. I'm doing my MA in Arts and Technology. Victoria told me that she's going to start preparing petri dishes, and every week I'm going to collect it twice or thrice during the week and try to observe it every week in the nights, and do it sometimes in the Artsai lab or at home. So there's a camera in the Artsai lab, so I used to use that to shoot the footage for the petri dishes and try to capture the light on the camera, try to capture bioluminescence on the screen, which was really difficult because the first petri dish that we got with bioluminescent bacteria was very faint. The light was really faint. So I started finding out new camera techniques, and fortunately recently one of my classmates, Adnan, had a really good camera, and we used it in his room and we tried it out, and it caught the bioluminescence really well. So Victoria helped in writing the journal and making a note
So I guess the first problem you ran into is just the quick and stupid idea of I'm just going to film the bioluminescent bacteria.
Yes.
Didn't work because they weren't bright enough. So what determines the brightness of the bioluminescence, Jeremiah?
Well, it's a couple of things. So bioluminescence is a multifaceted thing. I think one thing that really makes a big difference is what is exactly glowing inside of the bacteria. So, you know, a common fluorophore in biology is this green fluorescent protein. So that was the protein that came from jellyfish, and a couple years ago, a couple of people won their Nobel for that. And it turns out most GFP that we use, so that's the green fluorescent protein, the most of it is actually a mutant. So the original green fluorescent protein in the jellyfish actually isn't that bright. So, the proteins themselves that actually emit light, you know, there's a small little thing in there that called the chromophore, and that's what absorbs light and emits it. And sometimes those aren't very bright. So you have to find one in which that's particularly bright. And then there's also the way in which, because in bioluminescence, you know, the energy that causes the light, that comes from someplace else. That's actually generated by another series of proteins. And that can be a very efficient. And then the way they take, typically they take oxygen and then they convert that into an excited molecule that has lots of energy, and that energy gets transferred into this chromophore. And if the machinery that creates that excited oxygen, if that's particularly efficient, then that's great. And that also contributes to a brighter luminescence.
So Victoria was able to manipulate the bacteria on the petri dish and eventually got one that was brighter than the others, I guess.
Yeah, I was experimenting, I think, with a lot of different variables. In this particular case, I think ultimately I don't remember off the top of my head what she ultimately settled with, but we went away from GFP completely. I think it's actually some sort of a blue-emitting bacteria. So, yes, ultimately.
Okay, so finally, after several weeks of working with Victoria, you got it bright enough so that you could film it with Adnan Khan's camera. So how are you going about converting the brightness of a bacteria to sound?
So the first technique that I'm using was suggested by Scott Gresham Lancaster, the sound design specialist. He told me that we could use a Max patch or a PD extended patch, which is like a sonification software or a programming software for converting data into sounds. So I started working on the Max patch and started looking into different basics of it, how you convert a video into separate entities that change so that relative to that, it might produce some kind of a sound. So that when you capture the bioluminescence and you shoot it overnight into a time lapse or something like that,
That's because actually the bacteria develop rather slowly. So it's several hours that you need to monitor.
We monitored it for 3-4 days, and each day there was a change in the brightness and the area. So I was planning to like shoot a 5-day time lapse of the growth, and then use that video and apply a max patch to it, so that it make generate some sounds, and we can see the life of the bacteria or how they sound during their life.
Right, and one of the things you explained, Jeremiah, is that you know the bacteria that you're using have a normal sort of life cycle, right? I mean, they
right.
So why don't you just explain that and what the bacteria that are behaving properly, you know, how their life cycle is?
Bacteria have a normal phase, a couple lag phase, where you start off and they're getting acclimated to their environment, and then they become reproducing very quickly. And their reproduction is logarithmic. So you start off with one bacteria, that turns into two, those two turn into four, those four turn into eight. And so that growth, that exponential growth, is something that, you know, a computer algorithm should be able to monitor. It should be able to detect that. It should be able to see a change. So this blob detecting software should be able to see an exponential change relative to the initial lag phase. And then once bacteria reach a critical mass, they don't divide as fast. They sort of sustain themselves and they live normally. And then that's just sort of the normal phase of a bacteria's life.
So sort of a plateau period.
Yes, and that is true. And then, you know, in our petri dishes, we don't replenish their media or anything. If we don't, then they begin to die. And so then that would be sort of the terminal phase. And in that case, you would start to see, at least in the bioluminescence, you would see that decline. If they're dead, they can't bioluminesce.
Okay, so yesterday, for the first time, we heard the bacteria singing. So, Ritvik, maybe you can just explain what we were listening to yesterday, and maybe we'll play it at the end of this podcast.
Yeah, yesterday we just made scratch MIDI notes of a keyboard, which is the most basic note that a sonification software can play, and made like a patch with a very fast velocity of the note. That's why it was sounding really chaotic with different notes playing all together. So we plan to make it into a more orchestral noise, which is more organic and soft sounding so that everyone can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But with the idea being that, for instance, when the bacteria goes into its exponential phase, there'd be some kind of sound signature that was very recognizable.
What Catherine suggested was you use different layers of sounds which have a different timbre. The timbre represents the sound, so how thick a sound is. So as the timbre increases, you can actually identify it more easily. So that's what we are trying to incorporate in the patch now, so that we can differentiate what happens during the growth of the bacteria, so you can listen to it.
So what is the next step that we have to do on this project?
The next step would be to create a successful Max patch and monitor it.
Yeah.
And I think incorporate a musical instrument in it and try to make it interactive.
Okay, so that was a different idea that you had, Jeremiah, which is maybe one could put in a feedback loop somehow where somehow the sound is re-injected. So why don't you explain that idea?
Well, I'm actually particularly interested about that. So if we have a way to use a regular camera, off-the-shelf camera, I mean, okay, not off-the-shelf, obviously it has to be a decent camera. But if we can watch this with a camera and we can already show that we have the sonification technique down and we can say this is a healthy or an unhealthy colony, then that can potentially, you can create a loop. So if this colony is unhealthy, it's behaving as though it's oxygen deprived, then you have a servo that activates the oxygen bubbler, diffuses oxygen into the colony, and then things are fine. And you can imagine doing this sort of thing with a number of different variables. And an offshoot of that is, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if you could get bacteria to talk to something else? So, you know, if you start to get bacteria to talk to machines, and you can get those machines that then go off and do something else. Say, and I think somebody, we brought up the idea of water a plant. Okay, and so the plant needs to be watered, and when the plant gets watered, the bacteria get oxygen. And so in that sense, you can get the plant talking to the bacteria.
The next time you listen to us, you'll be listening to the songs of bacteria. And so the question we have for the listeners is, if you were a bacteria, what would you sing about? What makes you happy and unhappy? Because it's probably not the same thing as human beings, because bacteria love to be submerged in water for a very long time, and human beings don't. So this is a question to our listeners. If you were a bacteria, how would you sing and what would you sing about? I don't know if you have a response to that, Jeremiah.
I always assumed it was like the Munchkins from the Willy Wonka. They would sing like that. And they're just sort of happily singing in their little... Yes, as they do the...
Okay, so thank you, Jeremiah. Thank you, Riffic.